Halashing for Halas? Want to bri or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m. for Essen Fressen, where it's all about the food.
Good morning. You are listening to 101.9 High FM, and this is the Essen Fressen Show. My name is Daniel Kastner, more affectionately known as Chef Dan, and I want to welcome you to my first ever appearance on this show, and I just want to say a big thank you to High FM for giving me the opportunity to be on this show. As I say, this is my first time being on this show, so I want to just give you a little bit of background about myself, who I am, and yeah, hopefully we're going to have a awesome conversation today and in the future. So I'm a professional chef, and I have been now for about 5 years. I was trained in classical French cooking techniques at the HTA School of Culinary Art in Randburg. And I used to work in restaurants and hotels all across Johannesburg. But in more recent times, I've become religious. I've started keeping kosher and Shabbos, etc., etc. And now I bill myself as a kosher personal chef. And I've been doing this for about 2 years now. Now, while I do enjoy the high-end fine dining, cooking, dishes, techniques, you know, things like molecular gastronomy type food, I've moved away from that. And I've moved more to cooking home-style cooked Hamishire food. You know, just really good, healthy food that's filling, fulfilling, just delicious food. Instead of, you know, having those little plates with little tzatzkas here and there, you know, a little piece of bread, a little spread on it, you know, something like that. I've moved quite far away from that. I find that to be a little bit off-putting personally. So I'm looking forward to having a lot of unique and interesting guests on the show and just having conversations about food and cooking. I've got a love and passion for food beyond anything that I can explain with words. And I'm just so, so excited to share my passion with you. So without further ado, I would like to introduce my first guest for my show. And my guest today is my biggest fan, but also my biggest critic. She has been with me through thick and thin and has supported me in all of my adventures. She will always be the first person to praise me when I'm doing something well, and she will also be the person to tell me when I have made a mistake. So, without further ado, I would like to introduce my wife and my best friend in the entire world, Zahava Kastner.
Hello.
How are you doing today, Zahava?
No, I love this weather. I'm having a good time, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah, it is a bit chilly today. Perfect soup weather.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Zahava is a massive foodie, and she's always been since even before I met her.
Love food.
And we'll talk about that right after the break.
Halashing for Halas? Want to bri or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Chef Dan, and you're listening to the Essen Fressen Show. And we're back here with my wife, my best friend, Zahava. As I was saying, Zahava is a huge foodie, and she always has been, even since before I went to culinary school. And when I made the decision to go to culinary school, and I said to, we weren't married yet, so when I said to my then-girlfriend, Zahava, at the time, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to go to culinary school, and I want to become a chef. She said to me, without a doubt, go to culinary school, do what you want to do, follow your dreams. And the only condition she had to all of this was that she had to taste and eat all of my creations.
Oh, absolutely. How can you not, though?
Right? So the title of this episode is going to be Living with a Professional Chef, because I think that a lot of people that we talk to and a lot of our friends might think that it's all glitz and glam being married to a professional chef and living with me, right?
Right. Well, you know what? It's not all chalked up, you know, glitz and glammy.
No, not at all.
Sometimes the food's not so, you know, five courses and fine dining. And sometimes it's just pasta and sauce. And I'm fine with that. I like pasta.
Me too. In fact, I love pasta. But yeah, sometimes, you know, I'll come home from a busy day, or I'll come home from having been on a tour or something for a number of days at a time, and I simply do not feel like cooking. I mean, I go back to my father, who is an IT professional, and he spends his entire day at work from whatever time he opens the office, 8 o'clock in the morning, doing IT support for people. He's on the phone helping people the whole day with their email problems and whatnot. And then come along, he comes home, and I remember this very well from when I was a child. I'd be like, "Dad, you know, I need to print something for school. Please can you help me?" And the last thing he would want to do is help me after having spent the entire day helping other people with their computer problems. So I don't blame him for that, and I get the exact same feeling coming home.
You're standing on your feet all day, now you want to come back home and cook another meal.
Yeah, it's intense. It really, really is. So yeah, as Ahava says, we don't have elaborate meals every night of the week. I'm not making 10-course meals every night, tasting menus with sorbets in the middle, you know, things like that.
Going to palate cleansers.
Sometimes, and this is, again, as I say, this is the approach to food and cooking that I've taken, is that simple recipes is the way to go. My motto is keep it simple, stupid, and you can't go wrong. So, Zahava, I'd like to ask you, what is your favorite meal that I've cooked for you at home?
Ooh, that's a good one. There's a lot of things that you do cook, and really the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, Moetze Shabbos, a bowl of ramen, and you use leftover meat from Shabbos, you boil some eggs, and you just... It's so good, and it's so homey, and it's just delicious.
So,
and it's quick.
It is very quick. To expound on what Zahava is saying, we'll take a packet of 2-minute noodles, cook that up the way you would with some boiling water, and then we would go and add onto that some leftover meat from Shabbos, boil up a quick egg or two, throw that on there, you know,
little googie eggs. It's got to be runny in the middle.
Nice soft boiled egg, a little bit of soy sauce, maybe some spring onions if
I'm
we have that
hungry.
In the fridge. Oh yeah, me too. Hey, it's getting close to lunchtime.
Or even
now.
Edamame beans is also nice to add.
You know, whatever we have in the fridge at the time, eh? So Zahava, who in our house does most of the cooking?
Oh, we get asked that all the time. Oh,
I know, it's our favorite question.
You're married to a personal chef. You must get the best food. He must cook for you every night. Really, we share the food. We share the responsibilities of cooking. I do enjoy cooking sometimes. I got to work myself up. You know, I got to convince myself, you know, it's time to cook. But when I cook, you know, I cook really well, I think.
She does. She really, really does. And in fact, I'd like to talk about my favorite dish that Zahava's made for me, because my wife is an excellent cook. She really is.
Thanks, you too kind.
And my favorite dish changes that Zahava's made for me from time to time.
Because they're all so good. You can't choose.
And Zahava really pushes me to be creative in my cooking and to be creative in my ingredient choices, my recipes. She's always finding new things on TikTok and on Instagram, and she's always showing me these cool recipes and like out of the way wacky things, like let's do this, let's do that, let's try this ingredient, let's mix this with that and whatnot. So Zahava a few weeks ago comes to me with this Instagram video, and I watch this Instagram video with abhorration, if I can say. I was totally appalled by what I watched.
Okay, maybe it's got the wrong name. Maybe we just need to change the name.
Zahava shows me a video of a sushi bake. And it's rice and salmon and seaweed and sesame seeds.
And that's it.
And mayonnaise and exactly how you would find a piece of sushi. But it's baked in the oven.
Yeah.
And it's sort of layered like a casserole. And I just thought to myself, this is not okay.
Right. It shouldn't be called sushi. I do agree. It is an abomination. It shouldn't be called sushi. It's more like a casserole.
I mean, it's completely contrary to what sushi is. Mm-hmm. Sushi is supposed to be
raw fish
mm-hmm. and rice. That is the quintessential sushi.
Absolutely.
And here's
Zahava.
Yeah,
this one's more like a lasagna or even a cottage pie just made with rice and salmon.
Yeah.
You can even use tuna. I've seen a lot using tuna.
Oh, no, we used salmon, yeah.
Yeah.
No, you can use tuna. That would actually be quite nice, I think.
Mm, but try it again.
Yeah, it's like a sushi lasagna. And I thought to myself, no, this is the most bizarre thing in the world that I've ever seen. And to have her put the plate in front of me and I couldn't stop eating it, I thought it was the most unbelievably delicious thing in the entire world. And I'm sure in a few weeks' time, or after Pesach's over and everything, Zahava's going to come to me with something else, some other crazy dish or something, and she's going to cook for me something absolutely amazing.
Well, the salmon that I did use for it is the, what's it called? The off-cut salmon from Moishi's, which can be quite salty. So when I made this, I had to be very careful not to add too much soy sauce, because soy sauce makes everything salty. When I cooked this fish, it made it more salty.
Yeah, that fish does come out very salty.
Once it's cooked.
Yeah, it did, actually. I mean, it worked in the overall context of the dish, but I'd like to use that to go into a discussion about over and under seasoning food.
Swagwe.
This is a conversation Zahava and I have all the time, because Zahava and I have a very... we both have opposite stances when it comes to salt and salting your food. Personally, and because I have the skill and the experience having worked in so many different places and cooked for so many different people, I tend to salt to what would be considered the median average for an average person's palate. So for most people, my food will be seasoned just right.
For most people.
For most people.
Not for me.
Of course, you have people like my beautiful wife who have a tendency to under-season food.
Yeah, I'm very scared of salt.
Yeah, whereas I prefer to just put lots of salt, not to over-season. And we'll continue with this.
Chalashin for chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen Show. You're on Chai FM 101.9 FM. My name is Chef Dan, and we're here with my beautiful wife, Zahava. And we're talking about under-seasoning and over-seasoning food. My wife has a tendency to under-season food because she's afraid she's going to make the dish too salty for someone.
Well, I'd rather people tell me, look, I need to add some salt, rather than, oh, your food's too salty, I can't eat it. That would break my heart.
100%. And you've got to remember that once you've added the salt...
You can't take it out.
You can't take it out. And
how would you fix something like that?
Well, thank you for that question.
You're welcome.
The first thing that I would do there... is I've got a very scientific approach when it comes to food and recipes. And one of my big inspirations is a chef by the name of James Kenji Lopez Alt. And that's his surname, actually. It's not like an internet surname, alternate account. That's his name. And he wrote a book called The Food Lab, in which he delves deep into the food science, and he talks all about different practical ways to enhance your food and your recipes.
So if you had, for example, let's say a soup, I know a lot of people, well, the soups that I have, just because I'm sensitive to salt, it's over-salted. How would you fix a soup that's over-salted?
So what I would do is take a potato, sort of medium-sized, peel it, and plop that into your pot. And what that'll do is that potato should absorb quite a bit of the salt in your soup or in your stew. You could do this even with a stew. Because the problem is with a liquid-based dish like that, like a stew or a soup, no matter how much you reduce and boil that soup or that stew, all you're going to do is actually make it more salty and more concentrated. So by adding some more ingredient, which is what we're doing with the potato.
I've heard you can add like lemon juice.
Yes, and that's another thing you can do, is that you can balance your salt, and you should, and I encourage anyone who's listening to do this, balance your salt with acid. And it can be any kind of acid, not necessarily lemon juice. We've got a lot of different acids in our fridge and pantry at home. We've got lemon juice, balsamic vinegar, white wine vinegar, apple cider vinegar. And all of these different acids will add a different component to your dish, and they will uplift your dish, in fact. sometimes when you've got a very heavy dish with very heavy, rich flavors, sometimes it's actually beneficial to add a little bit of acid just to brighten things up, just to lift that dish up a little bit.
Mm. Oh, I do love soup though. I don't want over-salted soup.
No,
I love soup.
So you love soup, Zahava, but what can I ask you, if you had to eat one dish for the rest of your life, what would it be? Would it be soup?
Ooh. One dish for the rest of my life?
One dish for the rest of your life.
Every single day, three times a day, like breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Mm. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day.
I think you already know the answer to that one. I love sushi. apart from the cost, if it was free, I didn't have to pay for it. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, sushi.
Zahava is...
obsessed.
A certified sushi-holic.
I think I'm addicted, actually.
Probably. If anyone knows of any sushi rehabilitation facilities out there, please give us a call.
Well, that sounds good.
You can give the station a call on 0870551818. You can send us an SMS on 34519, or you can send us a telegram on 0618951019.
Now I'm going to ask you the same question, because you can't put me on the spot like that. What if you could only eat one thing for the rest of your life? I think I know the answer to this one. What would it be?
Well, just to give people a bit of context, Zahava and I have been together now for 8 years as of last week.
Two weeks ago.
My days are all mixed up. Yeah, we've been together. So I'd hope you know the answer to this question.
I think I do.
And it's very easy for me. Pizza.
Just straight up margarita pizza.
Straight up margarita pizza, bread, sauce, cheese.
How simple is that? Bread, sauce, and cheese. Yummy.
A lot of people will hear me talk about pizza being my favorite food, and they'll think, but Dan, you're a chef, you're qualified, you're a professional, pizza, like it's such a simple thing, like what's going on?
It's a simple way to a heart.
Yeah, but pizza is actually so rich and deep in terms of its science, its history, how you make pizza. There's so many different types of pizza. I mean, I can do a whole show on pizza. If that's something you're interested in, please send us an SMS or give us a call. Let us know. I'd be very happy to do a whole show on pizza. I mean,
I think you would have a lot to talk about there, because a lot of people, for whatever reason, pineapple on pizza is a big controversial conversation.
Ooh, that's that stirs the pot, in any conversation I get into about pizza, people are always, you're either on one side of that fence or on the opposite side of that fence. There is no in between. I've never met a person who's like, pineapple,
sometimes when I'm in the mood.
Sometimes, no, people are always
And they'll either. Fight to the death on this opinion.
Oh my word, I've read some heated internet debates about pineapple on pizza. But unfortunately, pizza is going to be out of the question in the coming days.
Oh, yeah.
Pace. I know. I don't want to talk about it, to be quite honest. It's
you don't have a choice. There's like a week to go.
Yeah. Less than a week at this point.
Yeah.
But we do need to discuss Pesach. And I know that I would love to pretend that it doesn't exist.
Well, there's only one thing I like about Pesach, though. You can pretend it doesn't exist, but this is... For some people, they don't eat it. I love it. Is just knedelach.
Yeah. What I do want to just say before we talk about knedelach, because that's also a fascinating topic, is that, look, I don't hate Pesach. It's not like I'm saying I hate it. It's, you know, Pesach is very difficult in terms of cleaning, changing kitchens, kashering, getting your kosher Pesach product. You know, you've got to figure out what is kosher for Pesach, what isn't, etc. But in fact, Zahava and I, we both really enjoy Pesach. We both really enjoy just being together, you know, trying new different recipes, as we've said. And yeah, knedel is one of those things, you know. I think
there's different ways that people make it, actually.
There's so many different ways. This week, in fact, or it was last week, I went down a bit of a knedel rabbit hole. and I've got a number of Jewish cookbooks at home. I've got the Arcadia cookbook from like 19, I think that book was published in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken. The Yeshiva College cookbook from back in the day.
Oh, OG.
Yeah. And there are so many different ways to make knedlach and so many different ideas and things involved in it. And I was fascinated. And for me also, yeah, definitely one of my favorite things about Pesach.
Mm. Cooking for Pesach is, you know, how do I say it?
It's challenging.
It is challenging. You gotta find some different things. I remember one year, oh, this was so funny. We talk about it all the time. Daniel's mom actually made rolls for Pesach. Oh my gosh. Kosher for Pesach, bread rolls. That's what she wanted to make. It was so funny. We laughed about it for weeks because they were just not what you want. They were rock hard.
We still laugh about it to this day, in fact. Those Pesach rolls were like literal boulders.
It was so funny.
They were so rock hard. Oh, but bless my mom. She's actually a much better cook than we're making her out to be on this show. And in fact, I would just want to say that my favorite part of Pesach, and mom, if you're listening, hi, is my mom's coconut macaroons.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to get into the debate, what's the difference between a macaroon and a macaron. That's a whole nother episode that we can have again over there. But my mom makes these coconut macarons. They're like a coconut biscuit. And every year when I smell those baking in the oven at my mom's house, as soon as I taste it, my mind just floods with all of these childhood memories, you know, helping my mom in the kitchen when I was a kid to shape these biscuits, put them on the baking tray. That smell of the toasted coconut in the oven just slowly caramelizing. Seriously, there's nothing quite like it.
Even I like the smell, and I really don't like coconut. It's not a thing for me. I'm not saying it's disgusting, just it's not for me.
As much as Zahava loves sushi, she hates coconuts.
Yes.
And every year it's actually hysterical.
I walk into that kitchen and these biscuits baking smell like love in an oven. They smell so good. And Daniel will sit there eating one with his cup of coffee. And I'm like, Dan, can I have a bite? Knowing full well I'm not going to enjoy it, but it smells amazing.
Every year without fail, Dan, can I taste the coconut macaroon
that
please?
I know I won't love.
And every year I look at Zahava with these big eyes and I say are you sure? I know you hate coconuts. This is not going to end well.
Well, you never know. One of these days, you know, it might change. I might come to love it. How will I know if I've made up my mind?
I think you have made up your mind about coconut, but that's besides the point.
I definitely have, but I will still ask to try it this year.
And, you know, the power of these coconut macaroons just led me to thinking about how powerful food is.
Mm.
You know, food is life in so many different ways. For me, of course, it's my job, but for you even, and for a lot of people I'm sure listening, food is more than just sustenance.
Mm.
It's more than just the nutrients and vitamins.
The smells spark up memories.
Smell, in fact, is the most powerful of your senses. Did you know that?
I actually did. Smell and taste. Because I'm a big foodie. I love my food.
Right, right. But smell, in fact, has been linked. There's studies you can go read how smell can dredge up memories.
Mm.
So far in the past.
Maybe not even all positive, just...
Yeah, positive and negative. Mm. That's how powerful smell is. And for me, you know, that coconut macaroon, as soon as I walk into that kitchen, it's like...
Ah, Pesach.
Yeah, and it's like I'm a 7-year-old kid again, helping my mom roll these things out. There's coconut all over the kitchen table because I spilt the packet or something like that, you know. And yeah, that's my entire approach to food, really, is that food is a vessel for us.
Mm.
It's a vessel for experience. It's a vessel for love. You know the old adage, a way to a man's heart is through his stomach.
Mm.
But I think it goes for more than men. I think it goes for everyone because there's nothing quite like sitting down with your family, with your friends, and enjoying a really, really delicious meal together. Those are everlasting memories.
Even the other night when we stepped out of the house and you take a deep breath and you can just, somebody's having a braai. You can smell it from miles away and it's so nostalgic.
Right? That smell of the burning charcoal and the meat sizzling away, the fat dripping down and sizzling onto those hot coals. And I think that's something that only South Africans will really understand. That smell of the braai is just unbelievable. And yeah, even that's a powerful thing,
and
you know.
It sticks to your clothes, but I digress.
Yeah. And Zahab was right. I mean, we walked out of our house last night or two nights ago, and straight away you hit with that intense smell of braai.
Oh, it smells good. Yeah. It's making me hungry now, actually.
I'm getting very hungry. I don't know how the other presenters do this show without, like, noshing on something, you know, during the show. Like, I'm actually quite hungry now. So that leads us into what's going to become a running segment on my show, Please God. And that's going to be called Nerdy Noshing. As I've said, I'm a massive proponent of science-based cooking and, you know, really trying to understand what food and cooking is all about, what makes food what it is, you know, in scientific terminology. So this section is going to be hopefully on each and every episode that I do. And I'm just going to talk about all things food science, food history, anything foodie that I find interesting.
I also find it interesting when you talk about it.
Zahava actually calls me sometimes a knowledge sponge.
Just absorbs information.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Whenever I don't know anything, I'm like, Dan, what's this, that, and the other? And he just goes, well, how am I supposed to know? Well, that's because you're a sponge.
I think that's the only way I was able to get through culinary school so late in my life after I had, you know, I hadn't studied anything for quite a while before culinary school. And yeah, I mean, I managed to just absorb the information. And I just love sharing that. And that's why I'm so grateful for this show and to be able to share my thoughts, my experiences and everything with you. Because I've got this passion for food, this passion for cooking, and I just want to share it. I want to share it with everyone who's willing to listen to me babble on about food for a solid 40 minutes at a time.
What are you going to be babbling about now?
So we're discussing Pesach, we're discussing knedel. I know not everyone has knedel on their table, you know. I know my rabbi, if you're listening, Rabbi, hello. He's not going to have knedel on his Pesach table. But I think something that everyone will have on their Pesach table, no matter what, is chicken soup. Would you agree?
Oh, love chicken soup. It's so, you know what? It's like a hug in a bowl.
Well, you know they call chicken soup Jewish penicillin.
And whenever you're feeling sick, just a bowl of chicken soup.
I mean, for me, the chicken soup's got to have a knedel in it, but I understand everyone's different traditions and different halachas and everything. So I want to talk about what makes a good chicken soup. I think that everybody has their own different ways of making chicken soup, their own different ways of, you know, some people are going to use a whole chicken, some people are going to use just the chicken carcass, just chicken giblets, etc. Some people use leeks instead of onions, some people put carrots, some people put celery, some people put other vegetables. But I want to really delve into the science behind what makes a really, really good chicken soup. What gives you that unbelievable just flavor and texture. So we'll discuss that right after the break.
Chalashing for chalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fresen. It's all about the food.
Welcome back to the Essen Fresen show on 101.9 FM, Chai FM. My name is Chef Dan. I'm here with my beautiful wife, Zahava. And we are doing the Nerdy Noshing segment, where I'm discussing food science, food history, and just anything really that I find interesting about food and cooking. We are talking chicken soup. Zahav.
Chicken soup. You were discussing earlier about what people use, giblets, chicken carcasses, full chickens. I have been saving up, anytime we've cooked chicken, I've been saving up all the giblets and all the chicken carcasses waiting for winter. They are there in the freezer and they're ready to be used.
Yeah, so we've got a little packet in the freezer, and maybe we must even bust it out tonight since it's been a bit of a chilly day today. Mm. We've got some chicken carcass, giblets, some chicken bones, and we're going to use all of that to make a delicious, delicious chicken soup.
Mm.
So hopefully today I want to teach you some scientifically proven ways to improve your chicken soup at home. Number one is umami.
Umami.
No, it's not that thing that Ross says from Friends.
Unagi.
I believe unagi in Japanese is eel, if I'm not mistaken.
I have no idea.
But anyways, I digress. Umami is the Japanese word that means savory taste. And it's one of the five basic tastes that we have on our tongues. Sweet, salty, sour, bitter, and umami.
Where do you find umami? On your tongue? Because I know that there's like, bitters at the back or salts on the side. Would umami be the whole tongue as a whole or in the middle?
So umami is sort of in the back middle of the tongue, if you were to look on a diagram, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, it's been a while since I was in culinary school learning this, but if I'm not mistaken, that's where it is. And bitter, in fact, just as a side note, the bitter taste buds on your tongue are right at the back. And it's very interesting why they are there. It's because that is your body's last defensive system against poisons. Because in the wild, berries and leaves and things that are bitter and have a bitter flavor are generally the poisonous kind. The poisonous berries and leaves, etc.
I know a different thing about poison berries, just to add to your sciencey bit. I know this one. I don't know if you do. The poem goes, red and yellow kill a fellow, purple and blue are good for you.
I did not know that.
We learn something new every day.
Well, please God, I'm never stranded in a jungle or something and please I have God. To use that that little saying. But anyways, back to chicken soup and umami specifically. It's a very hard flavor to describe. I mean, I say it's a savory taste. But it's generally associated with foods that contain high amounts of glutamic acid. This includes foods like soy sauce, cheese, roasted meats, tomatoes, all of those foods contribute to this umami flavor. If you want to add some intense umami flavor to your chicken soup, don't just plop the chicken in the pot.
Oh, that's how I was taught. Everything goes in a pot.
I know.
All at once.
And I don't know if there's any other chefs who are listening. If you are listening and you want to comment, please send us an SMS on 35519. Or a telegram on 061-895-1019. Or you can give the station a call on 087-055-1818. But me personally, I don't just plop everything in the pot. That's sacrilege where I come from.
Is that old school cooking?
I think it is very old school. And that's not how I was taught, at least. And I have learned that this is a much better way to make soup. The first thing you should do with your chicken, be it chicken pieces or chicken bones, chicken carcasses, whatever you have, is roast them. Roast them in your oven at a very high temperature. Watch them, of course, so that they don't burn. But what you want to happen is you want to get some browning occurring on the surface of those chicken bones. Even if you're using whole chicken, cut it up into pieces and you want to get some nice browning occurring on the chicken skin.
Instead of putting it in the oven, could you not roast it in the soup pot that you're going to use?
Yeah, definitely. That's actually a very common French technique, is to roast that off, to fry it off in the pot. And then what will happen is you'll get all of that beautiful little bits of
crispy chicken
and crispy bits on the pot, stuck to the bottom of the pot, literally stuck.
Have a name, it's called?
It's called fond.
Fond, that's...
And the reason it's called fond is because it's the foundation to a good stock or a good soup. And what you should then do is, if you do have that on the bottom of your pot, you need to add a little bit of liquid and actually scrape with a wooden spoon the bottom of that pot to get all of those crispy, delicious pieces up into your soup, because that's going to add so much delicious flavor. And roasting the chicken bones does, it creates that umami flavor via something known as the Maillard reaction. That is the name given to the browning that occurs on the surface of the chicken. It also occurs in coffee. If you roast in coffee, that roasty flavor is the Maillard reaction happening.
Fancy.
So, you know, just to stress that point, think about the difference between a roasted chicken in the oven and a boiled chicken that was just plopped in a pot with some salt, maybe, and then you ate that chicken afterwards.
Boiled chicken's got such an interesting smell, though.
Yeah, well, that's the smell of the chicken, because you're not, there's no Maillard reaction, there's nothing going on. It's a very, you could say it's a pure way to cook the chicken, but you're not going to add very much flavor.
Okay.
So next up, I want to talk about gelatin and collagen extraction. Zahav, have you ever had a watery chicken soup before? Or as, if I can say, chicken tea?
Oh, chicken tea. I actually like chicken tea, and I like chicken soup that's watery. Sometimes that's, you know, growing up, it was the easiest way to make chicken soup. Just really quick, plop everything apart. You still have the chicken-y flavor, but obviously not intense. But I do like chicken tea. I get made fun of all the time.
So just to explain a little, the chicken tea is like you've just had the chicken sort of sit in the pot and just sort of, you know, give over a little bit of its flavor. Yeah, it just had a little bit of a bath, and it's not great. You know, you really want to have a soup that contains gelatin and collagen, because that's what's going to give your soup that delicious, unctuous mouthfeel.
I also feel like it's more nutrients when you cook it that way, instead of just boiling everything.
Yeah, no, definitely. So gelatin and collagen are naturally occurring compounds found in all animal bones, everything from fish to beef and including chicken. And that's why those jelly sweets and things aren't kosher, of course, because they contain bovine gelatin. So now, in order to extract the most amount of collagen and gelatin into your soup, you need to firstly use pieces of chicken that are rich in collagen and gelatin. So that would be any sort of chicken bones, the carcasses especially, and the wings. The chicken wings contain a lot of really good gelatin.
That's cool.
The other part that will add a lot to your soup is the giblets. I know my grandparents used to love eating the chicken giblets, and my wife used to really enjoy eating the chicken necks.
Used to.
I know you.
I got grossed out about it a couple of years ago, but that's my problem.
Yeah. I know a lot of people enjoy the giblets.
And the stomach as well. My grandmother used to eat the stomach, the necks. Ooh, feet. I love chicken feet.
Chicken feet are also a really good source of collagen
for
your soup.
Whenever we talk about it, call it chicken runners.
Runners, yeah. No, but that's a really good way to add to your soup. I know a lot of people will even just discard the giblets because they don't really know what to do with them, or they're a bit grossed out by them, as Ahava says. But they are a really good source of this gelatin and collagen. So don't throw them away. Add them to your soup. Roast them up. Put them in your soup. And, you know, if you find it unappetizing or unappealing, you can always discard them afterwards. You don't have to serve them with your soup.
Khalashin for khalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. You're listening to the Essen Fressen show with me, Chef Dan, my guest, my wife, my best friend, Zahava. If you've got any questions for me, Chef Dan, you can SMS the station at 34519. You can send us a telegram on 061-895-1019, or you can give us a call on 087-055-1818. And just to end off the show, we were talking about how to give your soup, your chicken soup, that delicious mouthfeel. And for me, the most important thing here is you need to give your soup ample time to simmer. Not boil, simmer. I repeat, not boil, simmer. Because
just in case nobody heard.
Just in case no one heard. I get passionate sometimes. But please don't boil your soup crazy for hours at a time, because what that actually does is that destroys the volatile aromatic compounds in your vegetables, in your chicken, and you end up with, you know, not a nice tasting soup. And the other thing it does is that the boiling actually breaks down the gelatin and collagen instead of allowing it to slowly dissolve into your soup. And that's how you end up with that mouthfeel, that unctuousness in your soup, is from just slowly letting your soup simmer, and for an ample amount of time. Not for, don't leave your soup on the stove for 10 minutes and think it's done. That's how you end up with chicken tea. You know, you need to give it a solid hour or 2 hours to let that collagen break down, dissolve into the soup, and that's how you're going to end up with a really delicious soup. So I just want to just thank my beautiful wife here, Zahava, for joining me on my first show here on Chai FM. And I want to say thank you to you for listening, and I want to wish everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Have a great Pesach. I hope everyone's chicken soup is going to be delicious, and I'm looking forward to doing this again.